This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, chewing the fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio CALS, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org. Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio CALS. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of, and some you haven't heard of, but probably want to know about. Check out cals.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
Welcome again to another episode of Primary Sources, a service of the Central Arkansas Library System. I'm Matt DeCampbell, and with us today is Sally Mangle, the co-founder, founder, proprietor, the woman that you know as the Loblolly Ice Cream Woman, runs the Loblolly Creamery with its own storefront now in Soma, and many other things that I won't talk about because that's why we have her here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start at the beginning. You are not a Little Rock native, but have lived many places before coming here.
Yeah. Born in Oklahoma, lived in Texas, north of Boston and St. Louis.
And you moved because you...
My dad's job, so hospital brat.
What's the furthest from where you are now that you've lived?
I would say Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Okay. Culturally wise, too.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And were you near Boston? Were you near the big cities?
And, mm-hmm.
Okay.
North of Boston.
So then what's your history with Arkansas? How did you wind up here? How did you...
Yeah, moved here in 2009. My parents lived here before then, and they're always kind of my center. Like, I'm always used to wherever I live that they're there, so it just kind of made sense after college.
Which was, where was college, since you've lived all over the place?
Emory University in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And in Arkansas, didn't really know what to expect. You know, it's kind of a mystery. You're also not a native from Arkansas.
The transplant life.
Yeah. But it was really welcoming, especially Little Rock, and it was really easy to kind of find my grounds here. Yeah.
That experience then, when you were at the Green Corner store,
mm-hmm.
did that kind of give you the spark of, hey, we could do this?
Yeah. So kind of some background with the Green Corner store. It's in this really awesome historic building. The Lincoln Building, mm-hmm. which is attached to the Bernice Building, if that gives you context. It's right by the Bernice Garden, hence why Bernice Garden is called Bernice Garden.
Yeah.
The Lincoln Building was built in 1906 to 1906, sorry. And then it was built to be a drugstore, and it was Dawson's Drugstore from 1906 to 1967, which had a working soda fountain. Fast forward to like 2011, and we found the original fixtures of that building, or original vintage. They weren't original to the building, so
sure.
The beautiful like wood engraved shelves and the marble bar and the wood engraved mirror. So it was amazing. And so Shelley was looking to figure out what to do with that front space, the soda fountain. And so we were looking for something that fit the mission of the store, which was local, organic, fair trade, ethically sourced. And we couldn't really found anything locally. Mm-hmm. So I just thought we should make it ourselves. That's kind of where it started.
So when you decide we want to make our own ice cream, where do you start with that?
You start with the milk.
All right.
I know.
You got my attention. I love milk.
But basically what we wanted to do is why we wanted to make our own ice cream is we wanted to use local ingredients. So what I actually started with is, where are we going to source the milk? And then where are we going to source our ingredients that we can source locally? Mm. Which kind of just all fell into our lap really easily.
It caught on quickly then, or did it take a little bit of time as the neighborhood was growing and the store was growing?
Yeah, well, the first test was just to see if we could make a product that people wanted to eat. So our first experiment was during the first annual Arkansas Cornbread Festival.
Yeah.
That was on South Main. We purchased our commercial ice cream maker the day before the festival.
Wow.
Because at the time we were just experimenting with recipes on a household ice cream maker, a Cuisinart.
Yeah.
We attempted buttermilk ice cream because we entered in the cornbread competition of the festival. There was different entries. So there was traditional cornbread, sweet cornbread, and then non-traditional. And we entered in the non-traditional. And we did caramel polenta corn cake with buttermilk ice cream and berry compote.
Okay.
So the day before, we made this buttermilk ice cream. But people ate it, and we ended up somehow winning the non-traditional competition. I think putting ice cream on cornbread.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, that's going to give
cheating.
You a little hand up there. So, but they said non-traditional, so
yeah,
they left the door for you.
And that kind of gave us the push to be like, okay, we can do this. We have some sort of acceptance, like, we'll try it out. And so we started pinting up our ice cream first and selling it at the Green Corner store in a little display freezer. And it would empty out once a week. And so we're like, okay, we'll keep filling it up. And then once we got the soda fountain set up, we had about 8 flavors to begin with. Pretty simple. And we would do a lot of events before actually opening to kind of draw people in. So we'd do samplings or different events we'd partner with in the community to get the word out.
Okay, so then you start expanding. And, like, did you have the idea of, if you got going, this is what I'm going to want to do next, this, or was it kind of experimental, or was it based on customer demand, or how did you start expanding flavors and ideas?
Oh, there was never any rhyme or reason. And we just, if a flavor went out quickly, okay, I guess people liked it, we'll make it again. The first couple of years, we just experimented and made a bunch of flavors and really based it on what was in season. So in the fall, you know, pumpkins and grapes, muscadines, pecans are in season. So that's what we would base our flavors on.
What in your mind is the biggest experiment that didn't work as far as trying to create a flavor?
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever like an oops. There is some flavors that don't sell well as quickly as others. We did make a garlic ice cream one time that did not sell at all. But savory does sell really well. If we made like a rosemary ice cream or a pepper ice cream. We made a honey cumin ice cream that didn't turn out well. But luckily, most of the time, it goes well.
Yeah.
Even though I think it's not going to be popular. It is. We have a sweet corn blackberry right now that is really popular. We try to stay seasonal. So we're not going to always have strawberry ice cream, which I don't know if it's a faux pas to some customers, but we don't always have strawberry ice cream. I remember in the beginning we didn't have vanilla. We quickly made a vanilla.
Right, right.
But vanilla is really expensive. It's one of our most expensive flavors. So it's really interesting that it is, people call it basic.
Yeah, it's their baseline.
But it's really not a basic flavor. Vanilla, you know, you're not putting vanilla in every flavor. It's basically just vanilla. We put vanilla in.
Right. Vanilla then gets a bit of a bad rap then, I guess, because a lot of people just think of vanilla as,
yeah,
you know,
basic,
like you said, basic,
like,
and
they
simple.
They call themselves basic when they order vanilla, and I'm like, you're not basic. I mean, it's classic.
Right.
But you're not basic.
At what point did you decide to attach the Loblolly name to it and not just, or was it from the get-go?
Loblolly, it came from our state tree is a pine tree, but it's the Loblolly pine tree. So that's where it came from. It's just a really funny name. But actually, we were having a really hard time deciding what to name it. And I remember I was at Vino's with some friends, and I said, if anyone can think of a good name, you can have ice cream for life. So we went around.
I can imagine the number of.
Well, they didn't think I was really going to end up doing this and thinking like, oh, Sally's going to start an ice cream company.
True.
Let's see how long that lasts.
Yeah.
So we just went around thinking, and, you know, I really wanted to use local source and be an Arkansas company. So we wanted a tie in there somehow. And one of my friends was, you know, reading off the state.
Oh, yeah, the state everything.
Yeah, the bird.
The hummingbird. And
Yeah, the tree, the fruit. And he read off the tree, and we just thought that was so much fun.
Yeah.
Because it kind of sounds like you have a mouthful of food when you're talking, when you say loblolly.
Yeah. Or you're a small child or something, a very lyrical.
Yeah, and it was really fun in the beginning when people were just new to loblolly. I would just watch them say it over and over again, and it's kind of a tongue twister. Mm-hmm. And it's really enjoyable. I don't know. I think it's kind of humorous when people say it wrong.
Do you have I was going to say, do you have a favorite mispronunciation?
Yeah. I remember I was on TV. I don't remember what news channel. And I feel really bad for this anchor, but he was introducing me and he said lobotomy ice cream.
Wow. Keep your head cool as we remove your mind. Lobotomy ice cream. Well, I'm going to guess that they're grateful you don't remember what which TV station it was.
Oh, I loved it. I like when people say it wrong, because you can't be serious when you eat ice cream, and you kind of, I don't know, it makes people laugh. And
then at what point do you decide we got to take this out on the road?
Well, people kept asking us to come out. I don't say no a lot with loblolly. Kind of just say yes and see where it takes us. And we've gotten to do a lot of things because of that. We were selling pints at the Hillcrest Farmers Market, and it was just really hard with coolers and a table, and trying to present yourself as a business like that can be hard. People don't see you as credible, like, oh, you're trying to sell a dairy product out of a ice chest. But the truck kind of came about pretty early on because we just wanted to be able to bring the ice cream to people. You know, waiting for people to come to the soda fountain is great, but we wanted to bring it to them. So we started renovating a food truck, putting solar panels on there so we didn't need a loud generator. Just so we could be part of more events and be part of the community. It was a way to get to the festivals and be part of people's special events like weddings and birthday parties.
Yeah. And then while that's going on, then you have the largest ice cream producer in the region fall out of the market for a year and a half to 2 years.
Yeah, that was when we actually started. So that was closer
to
2011, 2012. We went to the Yarnell's auction.
Oh, well, no. You had the Yarnell's auction, but then you had Bluebell.
Oh, you're talking about the Listeria outbreak.
Yeah. And so I was wondering.
That was a couple years ago.
Yeah. And so I was kind of wondering how that affected things from the standpoint of, were people more like, okay, well, yeah, if we can find something that more locally sourced that we trust, or was it more there's this big hole in the market out there now or has it always been that people were going to seek you out either way?
We're a lot smaller scale,
of
obviously.
Course.
Very
yes.
Small batch. Very, very small compared to the bigger ice cream companies that you see in the bigger grocery stores. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can compare the two because our price point's a lot higher, too.
Sure. I just didn't know how that kind of changed the business.
True. But I think a lot of people appreciated what we were doing, maybe saw what we were doing more, like appreciated it, because looking at Bluebell, there was a lot of actually other companies, artisan ice cream companies, that had Listeria outbreaks as well. So we learned a lot for our sanitation and safety in our kitchen.
I can imagine.
So at that time, I wasn't really thinking about what the consumer thought looking at us. Mm-hmm. Well, I did. I was like, oh no, do they think we have Listeria? So I got really, I crunched down on our kitchen and made sure that we were very clean. HACCP friendly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people did appreciate us a little bit more after that, hopefully.
So now let's go back to what you brought up, which was the turnover of Yarnell's. And you said you went to the auction.
That was fun.
I can imagine. I mean, and it would seem to be fun for a pretty small window of people, right?
Yeah,
as far as the things that you can get really excited about.
Yeah, like freezers and freezer trucks and Yarnell's memorabilia. They were auctioning off everything. But at the end of it all, the I'm blanking on the name, but the Chicago Snack Company bought everything. So everything else was a wash.
It probably gave you a feel of, like, as you grew, things you were going to need to think about or look into obtaining maybe that you hadn't thought about as far as, you know, scaling up an operation.
Right, right. I mean, freezers are a big, big thing for an ice cream
company.
Obviously. Yeah.
Especially in the South. Okay.
And looking at those freezer trucks made me think about, okay, how are we going to transport ice cream? For the first couple of years, it was just coolers in the back of my car when we were delivering to restaurants or grocery stores. And that was hard because you have a very small window.
Right.
And you can't really travel to Hot Springs or Conway and drop off ice cream unless you have dry ice, but that gets expensive. So the truck was really something that we needed early on. And we were, so our ice cream truck is a 1990 Chevy step truck.
Okay.
It's not in its prime.
Well,
say that.
27 years old. I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. and it's been used pretty heavily. Like food trucks are kind of beaten down.
Mm-hmm.
And we would use that for our deliveries for wholesale around town. And it's pretty clunky. Like food trucks aren't aerodynamic.
They're not graceful creatures.
They're not. They're like manatees, you know? They kind of bump into stuff a lot. So I was taking that everywhere in Little Rock for our deliveries. And so at a certain point, we're like, okay, we need, last year early on, we got a delivery truck.
Have you ever thought about having a mascot? Because the Loblolly Manatee sounds like it would be a lot of fun.
That could be. I feel like now our mascot is the screaming ice cream cone.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, well, you should get a suit or something. Someone wear it.
It just walks around and screams at people.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right.
And throws ice cream at them.
Very, yeah. Yeah, it's very loud,
friendly.
But very kind. Yeah, yeah, you just have to get past the first. Doesn't make impressions too well. First impressions are a little tough because he's always screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. He, she, it, I don't know.
They. Yeah,
yeah, they, however the cone identifies. Then, of course, the last big step. Well, let's not get to that yet. Before we get to the storefront, let's talk about the rise of food trucks in Little Rock, because it has, I mean, in the past, probably 4 years, it has really seemed to ramp up exponentially. And I'm a little biased because I've been working with the food truck festival, but I mean, just seeing the size of that and seeing what's available around town seems like not probably what you expected when you first thought about having a food truck.
Right. I remember when we got our truck, there was only a few on the scene, and they were very far and few, but they were very unique,
mm-hmm.
like Southern Gourmetian, Waffle Wagon, The Beast. There was the Food Truck Little Rock, which is actually where we got our truck. We reincarnated it. So there was very small amount of trucks, and the Little Rock food truck scene is very different than any other city that you see food truck scenes because of our city laws. They can't just park on the street. They can't go to a busy area and just set up. They have to have permission. They sometimes have to pay to park on a private lot, or it's mostly used for events and festivals like the food truck festival.
Is it different from, and this is just a weird area of business we're getting into, but you see the snow cone stands that pop up seasonally, just kind of on. So, but it's different if you have an actual vehicle, or is it the same rules that you have to apply? Or I guess you've never really had to think about that too much.
I think it's the same. Yeah. They pay a rental fee to be on a parking lot. They just don't travel around,
right?
Which is probably smarter. I've thought about that. Like, where could I just park the Loblolly ice cream truck, and it could be like another storefront,
right? Well, that's what I saw this past year, and I was a bit jealous because I used to work at the Capitol, and I saw that Whole Hog, you know, had generated their truck and just parked it across the street from the Capitol for a few months. Yeah, I mean, that's such easy. And I would have walked there, you know, at least once a week.
Yeah.
So I can totally see the appeal of that.
Yeah, and it's really neat to watch other food trucks that have morphed into something else, like Hot Rod. Wiener's is now a really amazing restaurant in Cabot called Pea Farm Bistro. Southern Gourmetian has their brick and mortar. The Beast, Gwen, now is the head chef at Rebel Kettle. So it's neat to see like where these people that cook amazing food go to, or what becomes of these food trucks.
well, then we're kind of naturally progressing to the point where you're like, boy, I wish I could just like park somewhere. And you start thinking about brick and mortar.
Yeah. I mean, our brick and mortar was the Green Corner store.
You started brick, but your own specifically.
Yeah. And I
shingle.
Never really thought, well, a couple years ago, we started thinking about another location. Because the soda fountain is a great concept. It's just very limiting. You know, we have a certain amount of square feet, a certain amount of tables. There's 3 to 4 little marble tables. It's a very picturesque, old school soda fountain. Not like the 50s soda fountain, but, you know, the early 1900 soda fountain with the metal chairs, the metal stools. We used a lot of glassware. Serving fizzy sodas. So that was that aesthetic. But Loblolly, we were kind of doing, getting a little, going in a different direction, trying to do more stuff on our menu, but kind of limited to that marble bar.
Right.
8 feet
space. It became confining after a while. Beyond It started and as this great kind of foundation for everything.
Oh, yeah.
But then as you grow, I mean,
it was kind
you
of,
can't grow marble and chrome with you.
And it was great to experiment. And Shelley Green of the Green Corner Store was also expanding and wanting to carry more selection of things. And so we were kind of both getting too big. When a group of 6 people came in, we were full.
Yeah.
And we had gift shop hours because it was a store. So we couldn't be open late.
Right, when families are out walking at night.
So for 6 years, we were just open till 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. Or we tried 7 and 8 early on, and that didn't work because we were too new. And that was before, you know, the Root Cafe had moved in. That was before South on Main, before Red Duno, before a lot of places were done.
Before South Main was truly what it is now.
What people know it as, So we just, we kind of looked around and looked at various things. It would have been interesting to see if we actually committed to these other ideas we had.
Like?
Ooh.
Any of them you want to share?
We just looked into different neighborhoods. And we have a kitchen. We moved about a year ago from the church kitchen to our own. So we have our own kitchen, and it's by MacArthur Park or Stone's Throw. You might see our trucks parked near it. We like to keep it a little bit of a secret only because you get...
People will descend.
People live in... it's in Quapa Tower. But the residents there are always like, hey, can I get some ice cream?
Hey, neighbor, can I borrow a cup of ice cream?
And so we were looking at ideas about, could we have our shop with our kitchen? That would be amazing so that people could see us make the ice cream. Because we get a lot of questions about tours or if people can come stop by. And it's just hard, again, with manufacturing rules and listeria outbreaks. We're just very aware, like, the kitchen is this, like, little special place.
Yeah, you got to keep it, you got to keep it.
Tidy.
Yes, tidy and sealed off. And
So we were just, like, thinking about ideas for that. But then Studio Main, which rented the space next door to the Green Corner Store, they're an architecture nonprofit, and they're now in North Little Rock. They moved out, and so it just seemed like it landed in
the
our
right
lap
fit.
Again.
Yeah.
It was the right fit. Yeah. It would be an easy move if people didn't know we move. Well, they're just right next door. We're still in our neighborhood, and we could do everything we wanted to do. We could have more seating, be open late, and expand our menu.
Yeah, and you've done all 3 of those.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so we started with 6 to 8 flavors of ice cream, and one always being vanilla. And then when we made salted caramel, we didn't think that it was going to be an always flavor, like it always has to be there. Mm-hmm. But it's always there because customers have to have it.
Yep.
So really we only had 4 to 6 flavors that changed. And then we got to 10 flavors at the Green Corner Store. And at our shop next door, now we have up to 32 flavors. So that we can really expand our menu and our flavors and experiment more. Although I feel like we haven't experimented more. We just put the flavors that we know people like into the case.
Well, because, I mean, the storefront's a bit of an experiment. You know,
right,
like
right.
the next stage of,
yeah,
of where
true.
You go.
Yeah, that's true. It is a huge
yeah,
experiment.
Yeah. Did you do 32 just to spite Baskin-Robbins?
I wish it was just happenstance that the ice cream cases could fit 16 each.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
I don't know why they don't do it.
That's some handy math. Well, 31's catchy. I understand.
I guess,
you know,
yeah.
It rolls off the tongue. Unfortunate people that you really feel for, which are the lactose intolerant.
Yes.
And how are you guys, and then how is the kind of the industry in general, you know, I mean, I know there's advancements being made in all these directions with,
yeah.
you know, to people with sensitivities and allergies and what have you been able to do there?
Well, we have always tried to have a dairy-free option, not just for the lactose intolerance, but for those that choose like
yeah.
the vegan,
sure.
vegan crowd. And there's a big vegan community in Little Rock. It's really awesome to see the support around it. So we try to have at least 6 options for those
wow.
that can't have dairy or don't want to have dairy.
Sure.
And we also try to have vegan options that don't have honey, because we use local honey in all of our ice cream bases, just because it's a local source of honey. Let's try to use it. But those that don't eat it, we try to also offer that. And then at the Green Corner store, they have a lot of gluten-free options.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to be gluten-free completely in the beginning. But we add some baked good things into ice cream, and our baked goods aren't gluten-free at the moment. But what we do, and from the start we've had, is gluten-free and vegan waffle cones.
Oh, yeah.
So we just have our waffle cone. We don't really publicize it as much as maybe we should. But that's partly because those that don't want a gluten-free and vegan waffle cone,
yeah.
they kind of judge it before trying it. So we just, our waffle cone, hopefully most people can have it. And
yeah.
that's our goal, is that just so that everyone can have a waffle cone.
Yeah, it just tastes a little different as opposed to, for those who are just used to regular waffle cones.
Yeah,
just,
they are a little different. It's made with masa flour. It does have brown sugar and vanilla, so it's sweet. But yeah, it is a little different.
Are you courted now by a lot of local producers and growers as far as, you know, I'd love to have my honey in your, you know, in your ice cream or my.
We have a lot of great partnerships right now with farmers and local producers. But yeah, we do get questions about if we can put their wine or their candies in our ice cream. And we try the best we can to work with people. It's hard because we're still small, and we still try to make our ice cream, our price point, still available for people. So we still want like a $2 scoop of ice cream.
Sure.
So that it's a treat. So it's still, you know, something that you don't have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully a $2 scoop is still reasonable for families. So sometimes we can't work with other producers because, like us, our price point's a little higher than big factory food. But yeah, we try the best we can.
The freedom that you have has also, I know, created some opportunities in the past, like what you've done with Whitewater Tavern.
Yeah.
And was, just talk a little bit about that. About
that was
what
a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, just getting the word out about Loblolly, we were doing boozy milkshakes there for a couple years. We haven't done it in a while, but maybe we could do a comeback or something.
You won't hear a complaint from me.
And then at Vino's, we would do beer float nights. And when the brewery started popping up, we would partner with breweries on making beer flavors or doing beer float nights there. And at Stone's Throw, we've done a lot of beer ice creams with them, and Flyway and Lost 40 and Revel Kettle.
I was gonna say,
just
yeah.
pretty much anyone I could.
All of them.
We can do.
Yeah. Well, then, what's the next frontier for you? What's the next
mountain
you're chasing?
I guess it's based on what I want to say yes to, right?
I guess, yeah. But if you want other people to say yes to you, you know, what
right.
would you bring them for? What, I mean, is it larger distribution operation or what do you want to do?
Oh, that's a great question. I think we just want to make more ice cream and make better ice cream and make different flavors. So I would say that we want to keep improving on our flavors.
Okay.
And I hope that in the future we just kind of blow people away with our flavor ideas.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Well, we'll continue to watch and you know, keep a close eye on it. It's responsible as a community to keep a close eye on how your ice cream develops. Well, you have been listening to another episode of Primary Sources, a hard-hitting discussion about ice cream here in Little Rock. Sally Mangle, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And please plug away. If people want to find you physically online, how do they get to you?
Yeah, Loblolly Creamery. We're in the South Main neighborhood at 1423 Main Street, 15th and Main. So our shop. Find us at loblollycreamery.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
All the social media things. All right. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you. And
we'll see you next time, everyone, on Primary Sources.
You've been listening to Primary Sources on Radio CALS, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System, its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Job and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.